This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hi, Gary. How are you doing?
I'm well, Michelle. How are you?
This is our first Fuck Yeah Fridays.
I'm really excited about it.
Me too.
For everybody tuning in, because I know this first episode we're doing on my LinkedIn live, Michelle is one of the strongest entrepreneurs that I've come across in my journeys. And we've become friendly, and I just really adore, and I'll let her fully introduce herself to this audience, but I adore what her company and its mission is and what they mean to the community. And we got to yapping kind of one outside day in the macro and decided let's do a show.
I know. I'm so excited to be here with you. And I got a lot of early inspiration from what you did, Gary. So it's really cool. I've been a serial entrepreneur my whole life. was lucky enough to join the cast of the Canadian Shark Tank like 7 years ago. And I saw that founders were giving up way too much of their business in the early stages and then spending most of that money on ads and inventory. And that didn't make sense. And so through that experience, thought there had to be a better way to do this. Me and Andrew introduced this idea of revenue share financing. So we'll give you, you know, anywhere from $10,000 up to $10 million. And instead of taking, you know, 10 or 20 or 30% of your company that we'll own forever, we take a percentage of your revenue until we get our capital back plus 6%. It's not debt. We don't take your business if you don't pay us back. It's not a loan. There's no fixed payment timelines. There's no personal guarantees. And everyone thought we were fucking nuts when we started. I think, you know, we were in your home city of New York, and 250 people on Wall Street told us we were crazy at the beginning. But we figured out how to do this in scale. And most importantly, we've now backed more than 6,000 different founders with over $2.5 billion in capital. So this is not a small thing anymore. And our mission is to enable, in
Gary V simple English talk, this is a financing mechanism that doesn't force founders to give up so much equity of their business and isn't predatory, where, you know, people are getting screwed and you own their businesses. True?
Totally. I like that. I love that. That's as simple as it gets. And it was built on the fact that Andrew and I have both been ex-founders, and we wish there was a better way to do that. And we hope that this enables anyone with a great idea to build their business.
Knowing that that statement is very popular and like, whoa, a lot of people just got hit. Like, whoa, what is this? I need to, if they don't know this, is it tough to, here's just a real life question. Is it tough to meet the criteria of getting the financing?
No.
Because I'm empathetic to you guys too. Like, you don't want to be giving out money to people who can't pay it back. And there's a lot of headaches that come along with that.
Yeah. Here's the things we're looking for. We're looking for a minimum of $2,000 of monthly revenue. So you can be very early in your journey, and we'll start funding you then with our Clear Angel product. And we're looking for, you know, positive unit economics. So as an e-commerce business, if you sell something for $100, you got to have less than, you know, $100 of ad spend and product cost. And so that is, you know, should be relevant for your business no matter what you're selling. So it's not hard to get started with us. And we genuinely think businesses with great unit economics that are just starting to scale are ones that we should be investing in.
By the way, the other thing that's really cool about this show is that we see your comments LinkedIn. So please say hello. Let's do age, sex, location, AOL, 1995. Abram, good to see you. Jurgen, Kashi, Eric Music, great to see you. Bhakvin Patel, great to see you. Robert D. Stewart, awesome to see you. Thank you for tuning in to Fuck Yeah Fridays, where we talk to real entrepreneurs about real issues.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to bring on our first entrepreneur today, Kevin Gould, who's the founder of Glamnetics, and we'll get to hear just a tiny bit about his story, and then, you know, what are the challenges to do? And the whole point is supposed to be very relevant. It's like what Gary and I are seeing in the market today and how we can help.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
How you doing, Kevin?
Doing well. I'll give you guys a quick background. My name's Kevin. I'm the founder of Combo Ventures. Kind of under Combo, I'm the co-founder of a few different brands. One's called Glamnetic. We work with ClearBank for a while. Actually, we're in the eyelash space. Another is a women's hair brand called Insert Name Here. And then the third is a fragrance and candle brand that I actually built with these two influencers, the Dolan twins. We'll do, you know, high eight figures in revenue this year, self-funded everything. So we haven't taken on capital.
Eight figures across the three major brands you have.
Yeah, you know, it's really two of the bigger ones, Glamnetic and then Insert Name Here. We're omni-channel, so we're D2C. We're in over 1,000 Ultas. Just rolled out Sephora. We got about 150 employees now across everything.
Awesome.
It's been a fun ride, man. It's
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's obviously, I'm sure you guys are seeing it's crazy right now with all the iOS updates and everything going on ad space. And so
let me jump in because I want this to be educational.
Yeah,
you know, obviously you're deeper along with a real actual business, and there's a lot of aspiring people here. Apple, with its iOS update, has really gone heavy into privacy. And if people think 14.5 is tough, wait till they find out what 15 has in store with email. What that's meant for Kevin and a lot of you here is the retargeting capabilities are just, and many other nuances, are not where they were over the last decade, which has a lot of direct-to-consumer small and medium-sized businesses in a challenge to be better with other best practices that don't require an incredible strategy around media in a Facebook, Instagram environment. True, Kevin?
Yeah, very true. I mean, I think what I tell our team, right, is there's certain things we can't control, which we can't control the cost of Facebook, can't control CPMs. You can optimize for it, but I mean, that's out of our control. So what we really try to focus on is what are the things that we can do as a brand that we can control. So if you're like an early founder out there, some things we think about are, you know, like DMs, right? We look at DMs as a sales prospecting channel.
100%.
Everyone DMs us, like we're engaging and we
scale the unscalable, I always say.
Exactly.
Right? Everyone wants scale.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, every one of you, by the way, who's trying to build a personal brand or trying to build a company, you always want to find viral and the hack. Meanwhile, there's comments and DMs sitting there and you have no effort towards them. You're obsessed with acquisition and vanity metrics and you have no care to actual relationships and retention, and that lives in DM. I agree, Kevin. I'm devastated that I'm at the point of my career, 2007 to 2011, this is real talk now, 2007, this is actually insane. I'm going to use this format to say it. The only reason Gary Vee exists is because from 2007, only reason, besides everybody does content.
Yeah.
The only reason I think I was different is because from 2007 to 2011, I replied to every DM, every email, and every tweet mention of me.
No.
All of them.
Yep. Yourself?
Me, myself. I still, there's a reason there's a Team Gary Vee Twitter and Instagram account. I still am the person that replies to everything when it's me. Nobody in the history of my life has ever typed anything as Gary Vee ever.
By the way, that makes a huge difference long-term too, because for us, like when we started the brands a few years ago, we replied to every single, you know, DM, and that fostered and built the community, right? And I think the things that make a brand defensible now against things like changes in iOS and Facebook is that community and brand factor. And I think the other thing we thought about a lot is like, we're trying to find pockets of things where there's a gap or an opportunity where we can jump in. So something I'm personally really bullish on is live commerce. We do 75 Facebook lives a month. Between our own brand, between influencers. And I think like we're trying to get way ahead of it and like be way ahead in building the infrastructure, but you kind of got to do, there's not one thing that can make up for the scale of, you know, ads. And so you have to really do everything right. And it's really fucking hard right now. So I think if you're a founder, you need to be prepared to go in and work really hard.
If you're a founder that, and you know this, that over the last decade, Facebook and Instagram made it math easy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right? Like, you know, by the way, Kevin, you know what you're going through? What I went through when email matured. I got addicted. But the reason I saw
this. I was there when email matured too. As an e-commerce site that had 90% came through email. And I remember that. It was
Kevin,
painful.
You're looking at two people that went through this thing when it happened to email, right? It happened. Now that happened a little bit more naturally by the consumer. But look, web, let's call it what it is. Web3 is staring everyone in the face. All of this is going to go to a place where consumers have ultimate control. We have people going to non-custodial wallets. People are controlling their money, let alone their information. So it's a very, very, very interesting time. So I like that. I like your energies and your eyes wide open kind of like focus on what you're actually going into. And I think actually not being delusional is the best way to attack what you're about to go through.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, I think you have to be an optimistic realist, right? And I think the other thing that I think a lot of founders aren't as tight on is you need to be really tight on your numbers. Like, we didn't raise capital, right? And so when you do go through challenges where marketing costs rise or whatever, you need to be really tight on things. The other thing I tell the team all the time is, like, there's two ways to make money. You can obviously sell more, or you can get really tight on your costs and, like, find ways to, whether it's packaging or shipping or, you know, reducing vendor costs. There's a lot of ways to, you know, run a business tight and figure out a way to scale it.
Yeah. And hopefully we've been helpful in giving you some of that capital to grow, and you still own the whole thing.
Yeah, no, it's been great. I mean, we worked with you guys for a while now, and ClearBank's been super helpful. And we haven't raised any capital outside of ClearBank.
Kev, what can we answer for you? Like, what very narrow or any other concept? Like, what's like a good question to ask? Like, what can we answer for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm just here to chop it up with whatever you think is working now in the space, right? Because I'm sure, you know, the brands you work with, what we're doing, we're all kind of doing the same things. We're trying to get scale through TV. So that's our scale factor. We just launched TV last year.
So let's start right there. I actually think that's a bad idea. I could be wrong. And I know that every brand goes to this place. Let me tell you my take on TV, the remnant TV DR move that a lot of the brands that you grew up looking up to are a couple years ahead or financially ahead because of capital raise. It's interesting. VaynerMedia, my company's starting to really explode because a lot of that DTC crew is realizing that TV is not performing for them as much as they'd like for the investment involved. Of course it's performing. When you spend tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, things will happen. I think there's a Dollar Shave Club purple mattress thing that I'm surprised so many of these brands have not gone down the path of, which is the following. The long form 35, 55, 95, 155 second video.
Yep.
In IGTV, Facebook, and pre-roll YouTube, matching the creative and distribution costs of remnant TV, are outperforming TV. And you can make more contextual creative. So I guess the question I have with that one is, have you thought about doing a significant A/B test, or how much effort has been put into what I would call brandformance, long form video that, like, Kin Insurance, K-I-N, did we worked with them and did something called Florida Man, and it's Florida, comma, man. And that anthem 3-minute video is dominating in performance as a top of the funnel to drive down CAC.
Yep. Yeah, I think we obviously run a lot on, and we should try, I think we should for sure try out some of those formats. I mean, we've spent probably $30 million over the last 20 months. So we spent a lot of money on acquisition. And this is doing this again, not by raising lots of VC money and, you know, burning.
Running an actual business.
I believe in running a business. And so I think the way we're looking at TV is, and I think the debate's out if it's going to work or not. We're in Ulta, we're in Sephora, we've got Amazon. And so we're trying to figure out, because it's a shit show right now in attribution, right? So now you can't look in platform on Facebook anymore. Everyone's trying to build a new model. And, like, how do they look at GA? Where's the attribution coming from?
The problem is you're doing brand, right? And performance. And so, like, first of all, brand is not measurable.
Yep.
And the thing that I like about, so have you done a 2-minute brand performance video for pre-roll YouTube or Facebook?
We've done a YouTube 1-minute video that we're running. But the thing is with costs right now in acquisition, right, it's just super high. And with, you know, they lost all their data, right? So Facebook and YouTube.
Yeah, but television has no data.
It's got a little bit with the connected TVs and IP addresses. And it's a little bit of us having to be really smart about the way we're looking at data.
What you're going to find out, which is where everyone's gone, nobody wants to watch it.
Right. We might be like, damn, we dropped a couple hundred K.
Yeah, you don't care about that. And by the way, at first, it's going to work a little something. What I believe, and I have a lot of confidence in this by looking at a lot of stuff, is it's the creative.
Yep. It's all in the creative.
The creative. You know this. And the creative flexibility you have on doing an Amazon Fire Stick execution or a pre-roll YouTube. They don't have the data, but they have enough data to give you some level. It's not like you have first party retargeting data.
100%. I mean, but I kind of look at it like influencers, right? Like if you look at costs in the space, Facebook and YouTube, everything's going up. Influencer costs have basically stayed flat. So we're like, okay, we'll invest in influencer. We can see direct through discount codes. You're never going to get back to like more than a one-to-one, but then there's a halo effect. You hit them.
Yeah, I mean, Kev, honestly, the biggest mistake that brands and companies like you historically make is they don't take into account the collateral impact of the spend.
Right.
If I do something with an influencer, I don't give a fuck about how, let me phrase, I do care about how they perform back to your one-to-one conversation, but I'm getting their endorsement.
That, for sure, that's what I mean. So if we can get back to close to one-to-one, but then we're getting the halo and we're getting the retargeting and more people in the funnel.
But this is why I want you to really take this episode and come back and say, are we pushing the envelope to go viral creatively, like a Purple Mattress video or a Dollar Shave Club? Because once you have to understand, there's no shot on TV you're gonna have this, but you do have the chance to make a video that's a minute 47 if you actually try to make it not with performance in mind, can I get every human on the internet for 48 hours to share this fucking video?
That part makes sense. Totally makes sense. I agree.
That's where I think the branding, you know how I think about it, Kev? I apologize, Michelle, last point. It's like going 1 for 4 with a home run.
Yep.
Right? Like I'd rather you spend 200K 4 times on a Dollar Shave Club attempt. Like we had it happen with Dwayne Wade and Budweiser a couple years ago when he retired. We did this video where like he was retiring his jerseys with like real people that he interacted with in his career. And it completely like changed. Budweiser's a massive brand. It's hard to sell more Budweiser. I think that your DNA actually from performance and social lends itself to having ingredients that are required to make a video that all of us lose our mind about and share, but you have to go for it. And what happens is brands go for remnant performance-based TVC to do it. And I think that's the opportunity for you to think about.
Makes sense.
Awesome. Well, good luck, Kevin. I had one more question on social selling, but I think we're almost out of time here. So we're gonna-
Go ahead.
Pardon?
Oh no, go ahead. It sounds like we're out of time.
No, it's okay. Well, we're going to give I want a 30 second answer from you. So you've really used influencers and how have the lives and social selling worked and any tips for other founders out there on that?
Yeah, I think you need to build the infrastructure and the team and need to start small. So I'd set a goal if you're a new company and try to do 5, you know, Facebook or Instagram lives a month, go find influencers that are micro influencers that are really good at educating the audience. Cause I think live selling is an amazing opportunity to educate. And you know, you got to kind of test out and figure out which influencers work and then just build the infrastructure from 100%. There.
Brother, what about Twitch? And then finally, one last point. Have you thought about launching an NFT project where the token is actually a subscription to a yearly subscription pass?
I love what the Hundreds did with that. I think they like nailed this sort of like, they basically turned it into a loyalty program. I'm definitely thinking through it, but I feel like I'm in the exploratory need to understand the space a little bit more phase before I figure out what to do.
Let me give you the boost that I gave Bobby and Ben when we talked in February, which led to that project. You need to get really fucking serious about the exploratory.
Yep.
Whatever you're going to do tomorrow, well, tomorrow's Saturday and I don't want to take your weekends, but I'm sure at this stage of your career, that plays as well, but let's push it to Monday. You need to allocate an hour a day to Web3 because you're way too young, first of all, so it's gonna impact your whole life. Second of all, I'm completely convinced. I sold over 1 million copies of my book that's coming out in November by creating an airdrop of a token for everybody who bought 12 copies. To give you context, the single most successful nonfiction book first week sales of all time is Barack Obama, and he sold 1.7 million in week one. I sold over 1 million in 24 hours because of the conjunction. We are in a hyper moment of NFT right now that will ebb and flow. If you create a meaningful project and you have plenty of emails and to like give promotion to this, where by buying the NFT, it also triggers a discount to a subscription of your core product, but they know that they have an inherent value in the NFT as well. I think there's something there for you to think about.
I agree. What's interesting too, the last point is my co-founder, Anne, is actually, her previous career was an artist. So we've been really toying with the idea.
I mean, now you're making me throw up. Now I'm really focused. Now I'm like.
It's definitely teed up to do something.
Please,
there,
so. Please use this. Please use the serendipity of this. So there's a triple extra push.
Appreciate it. It was good to chat with you guys. I know you got to.
Yeah, I know. We got to hop to the next. Thank you for being here, Kevin.
All right. See you guys later. Bye.
Okay. So our next segment on Advice of the Week is to bring back Bobby and Brianna Britton, co-founders of O Positive and Flow Vitamins.
Hey, Gary, Michelle. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, I'm so excited to be here.
We're co-founders of O Positive. Our parent brand, Flow Vitamins, is the first ever gummy vitamin for PMS. And we're developing other products in the feminine health space to hopefully change the way people interact with their health and take vitamins forever. So excited to ask some questions. We have quite a bit. I'll let Brianna.
And you guys are crushing it. So congrats on like
thank you. That's so nice. Yeah. So our first question, obviously we're a PMS gummy vitamin. So it kind of runs that fine line between being a fun brand that is really focused on women and also being a scientific authority in the female space. So I wanted to ask how you guys recommend kind of riding that line, finding the perfect balance, and also which avenue you think holds more weight, going the scientific route or more of the brand route?
I'm obsessed with the word and versus or, and I'm obsessed with people not debating things in boardrooms that normal human beings don't care about.
Yeah.
So, you know, so my quick answer to this is whatever the woman on the other side or the person that may influence the woman that will use the product, whether they're passionate about the scientific or passionate about you taking an important subject matter and giving it a little more breathing room where it's not so serious and intense.
Mm-hmm.
You should not make the decision for the consumer. You should go both hard on both. They both play. You know, mm-hmm. They both play. They historically both play. But on the other side, there's humans that will go more for one or the other or love the fact that it's both. And I don't think you take your foot off either pedal and you just keep pushing and pushing and pushing both narratives because they're both true. Like you can be funny and very mathematically smart. You can be, right? You can be ambitious. I'm a living contradiction. I am wildly ambitious and extraordinarily patient, and that fucks with people's brains. I don't think there is any rules, and I think that people, especially when they go with a student mentality, try to create rules when the consumer on the other side doesn't have them.
I was just gonna say, it probably funnels really well into something more long form. When you're thinking, try to tactically, when you're talking about a long form kind of purple pillow video, I mean, that's both brand and science. How would you kind of go about that? Is that kind of a strong avenue to both balance brand and have the time to explain the brand, but also have the time to explain really the science between hormones and how these herbs
ingredients
interact with your body.
And how those all kind of tie in together?
Yeah, I think the other thing that I would add is I sometimes found founders get really precious about their brand and they like are like, this is it. And I don't want to test. Like, this is one of those things that you like A/B test the fuck out of.
Yeah.
You have stuff that's way more scientific. You have stuff that's way more fun and playful. And then, as Gary said, you end up seeing how these audiences segment, but like, just don't be too precious around like, oh, well, if we do this, it's going to somehow ruin the brand. Like a brand is like, it's like a person. It grows and it changes with times and it evolves. Yeah. And so
most of all, like a person, it's dramatically resilient. And it's like parenting. Parents in today's world are way too into their kids' shit, which is creating anxiety.
And I
think business owners are overanalyzing missteps. I can't explain to you how many mistakes VaynerX makes a day, an hour. And I think that people are crippled by instead of understanding it's all just actually a process.
Yeah, and learning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's the essence of what you built. Like, if I asked you, is this about science or fun, you know, brand, like a little bit more fun, taking some of the steam out of it? The answer is both.
I know. Yeah, you're right.
So,
it
so,
is.
So why are we picking all of a sudden?
Yeah.
People, this is what's going on in NFT land. They're like, yeah. All these art people are like, this fucking sucks. I'm like, why does it have to suck? It's not coming out of you. The people don't understand. The world is inherently abundant.
Yeah.
And you have a lot of customers, and there's three ways they're going to look at it. All science, all fun, loving the fact that it's both. Yeah. Love your triangle. Love your triangle. It's all three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. 100%.
I think the next question maybe is more around content, right? And producing content. I think a Facebook ad used to have a life of weeks and months sometimes and would grow the company for that entire time. And now you're looking at things like TikTok where an ad might have the life of 3 days and they burn out so quickly.
Only because people don't know how to run those ads. The difference is the Facebook ad was performance with advancement, yeah, heavily predicated on math with art. Yeah. TikTok is art, art, art. But if you take a viral TikTok and you turn it an organic viral TikTok, so TikTok to me is go heavy on organic 4 times a day.
Yeah.
Take something that went viral, which means it hit the tonality that people were looking for, and then refurbish that into an ad, call it like brandformance.
Yeah.
And then run that. I think you can get much more longevity than you think.
And who are the people to make that? Like, who is the ideal? Yeah. Is it native creators? Is it people on your team? Like, how do you seek out and find this talent?
And you just, by the way, you just answered both.
Yeah.
You know the answers, Bobby. Yes, it is. It's influencers. It's an internal team. It's why I built VaynerMedia. We do very well with that with Fortune 500. It's why I built the Sasha Group, because I needed to do it well for your size companies, not just Budweiser. And you know, I think it should be something you always build internally. I think it's always good to work with external if the people really know what they're doing, as kind of like a lease. I always tell my clients, I'm like, I'm here for 24 months, not 24 years. Yeah. If we do what we're doing well, it will become so ingrained in you, you'll understand it, and then you'll decide, fuck it, we're going to build this ourselves. And that doesn't bother me, that excites me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Like teach a man to fish.
Yeah, but you're competing against, again, these native creators. So you're almost like bring them into your circle, right? Have them help you learn the platform and create things like that platform, right?
And by the way, this is where everyone's getting caught. You're not competing with them.
Yeah.
Like, let me explain. There's an abundance of attention. Yes, Karen might go crazy and get very big. Kim Kardashian is quite famous. Ready for this? Kim Kardashian has not put anybody out of business.
Yeah.
You have to go there. Like, yes, it's great that these 47 girls are promoting your competitor's product. It still means nothing in the end of the day because there's another 4,700 of them right behind it.
I think one of the keys to TikTok, though, is that people relate to them and the authenticity of it. So I think the posts that go viral are the ones that are so authentic and so genuine. And
I would say
as a brand,
I would say that there's unlimited posts, because this is my life, going viral and succeeding, that are contextual to the platform, not necessarily authentic.
Interesting.
Okay.
Got it? Don't mix up contextually strategic versus authentic. Because when you think it's authentic, you two go into a place over dinner saying, fuck, you know, if we pay them, it's not gonna be authentic, and then it's not gonna work. Where in reality, what's happening is the reason a lot of people are not winning on TikTok is they don't know how to make content for TikTok. But if you make content for TikTok that is actually an ad or paid for through an influencer, it always works.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's about being contextual.
It's about being contextually native to the platform.
Not trying to put your flow bottle on a dance that is popping something.
Yeah. Exactly. Let me give you an example. You can pick the influencer and then tell her, do whatever the fuck you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They built an audience because they know, like, this is where brands always fuck up. They're like, hey, we love you. Let's make Michelle the influencer. Michelle, we love you and you're amazing. Okay, now. You've got to at least mention our brand 3 times. You've got, like, they get heavy handed.
Yeah.
You control who you're going to give money to and then get out of the fucking way.
Okay.
Then do that 100 times, see what you like, and then build from there.
It's so true, because actually the best posts are always when I'm like, this, actually, I love my Oura Ring. It's my favorite thing. I talk about it all the time. I like post my sleep. They've never paid or asked me to do that. But the moment, because I've gotten all these brand briefs and it's like, Penn Michelle, they actually sometimes write the script for you. They say like what you need to mention is like the benefits and features. It's like, no one gives a shit about that. People actually want to know that I use the product. And so it's like, I love that. And I've seen that so many times.
But I'm just adding this because it's important.
Yeah.
We have unlimited things working. That is a paid influencer thing.
Yeah.
We just don't tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we always win that with our clients. Like I do it and I'm great and it's easy for me. But for my clients, a lot of times I can't get, even though they hire us, even with me involved, sometimes they can't get there. And the reality is it bites them in the ass and then they adjust. You pick who you want to endorse and then get completely out of the way, which is fallacy in brand land historically.
Yeah.
It's not what they teach you in school, you know? And so that is what you need to think about. And then when it hit, the other thing you want to ask them for is the ability to run ads against that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, you need to do a lot of DIY, your own shit, and learn infotainment style stuff organically. If it hits, slightly tweak it, change the copy, and turn it into an ad.
Yep. That's great. That's awesome.
Infotainment. I love that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys. Those were our two questions. Really appreciate the time. And thanks for having us on. Gary, great to meet you. Michelle, always a pleasure.
Awesome. Okay. So I think Gary and I have time for a couple of audience Q&A. So just tell people to drop their comments in the chat, and we can do one or two other quick ones.
Michelle, while we're letting people drop their questions in,
are
you going to be looking for them, or is somebody going to pop in, or how are we doing it?
That's a really good question.
Okay, we'll let Dustin or Seth, if you want to pop on camera, I always like breaking the wall. Oh, I see what they're doing. They just showed us the preview. They'll put it on screen. You please read it, because I can't read, and then we'll jam. But before we go into questions, 2 minutes, because you know I've been yapping too much, and we haven't been able to tap into the brilliance that you are. Give me one or two common themes you're seeing right now. You're sitting at the top of this company that gets to see a lot of what's working, what's not working. Anything emerging that's very of the moment that's really got your attention?
Oh, it's a really good question. I actually think the number one thing we've seen very recently, I love what you said about NFTs earlier. I think there's tons of potential there, is actually like we're getting this like critical mass on social selling. Like I haven't seen anything that's like looked quite that big in terms of live, in terms of the way influencers, and then that hedge against all these other rising ad costs. And I think what you said was correct. We are heading to a world where people, like, you're not even going to be able to see my credit card transactions. You're not going to see anything about me. And so our ability to guess is going to go away. And so what that means is that your friends, which have actually always been the best people to sell you a product, because referrals and word of mouth, and like, there's a reason we've been talking about an NPS score.
And what's the fine line between that and the skeeziness of, you know, where people haven't historically liked, you know, the worst case, worst versions of MLM or network marketing?
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is all about authenticity and standing behind your product, right? At the end of the day, you have to know that something is going to show up at your door, and all of our mailboxes are full, and you're going to open something and you're going to literally keep it on your body and not take it off, or it's going to go right back in the box, right back into the garbage. And that's where you lose and gain all your points, whether you call that an influencer, whether you call that a friend, like it does not. And the MLM things have always fallen apart there, because it was never.
Yeah, it was about the money you make by getting more people in your tree, not the product you actually sold.
Not the product you actually
sold. All right, let's get some questions.
Okay. I'm seeing more brands that think about wholesale. Any tips on how D2C can execute well in a wholesale retail environment?
Your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I'd say, honestly, this is so hard about building a startup, but you should actually try and get to a certain scale before you start distracting yourself. So I think the right time to be thinking at wholesale is maybe when you're at 5 million, maybe when you're at 10 million of online revenue, then at least you have your like logistics set up and you can start thinking about that. I've seen so many brands do wholesale way too early, and then they get very, very distracted because there's like three sides of the houses to manage and you have two separate supply chains. And then you're looking for, this is really about, and the other thing that I've seen brands do really well at this stage is that they can negotiate with their wholesalers and their retailers once they have an online presence. You are at the mercy of these retailers and they're all making, you know, they're basically buying your product on consignment. You're going to have to take it back. Like the terms are so bad. But if you have a brand that people want with a big social audience that's now making a retailer cool, all of those dynamics switch upside down almost immediately. I don't know, Gary, if you want to add anything there.
I just think that you need to know what is happening when you're dancing with the devil, right? The retailers have a lot of leverage and they can really, really change the narrative of your brand. And, you know, I think that the longer you can go direct to consumer and collect that consumer, and I think people go for short-term growth and give up leverage. The longer you could be without a wholesaler and without a retailer, the longer you have control.
I'm going to let you take this one, Gary, first. How do you bring together an influencer community when you don't have much engagement?
I'm not sure I really understand that. How do you bring together an influencer community when you don't have much engagement? I'm not exactly sure, Jacob, if you can do a follow-up question, but it sounds like a kind of a chicken and egg thing. Like, you can only have a community when there is engagement. It's like, you know, how do you get into shape when you're not willing to do exercise and eat well? You're not. So that's how I kind of took that. Let's get a follow-up on that. Let's keep going. Yeah.
On the topic of NFTs, what does Gary Vaynerchuk think about companies like Masterworks, which are democratizing the art industry?
I haven't had a chance to look at Masterworks. I apologize. I can't speak to that. What I can tell you is companies don't need to exist to democratize the industry. The blockchain by nature is democratizing the industry. The concept of NFTs and decentralized servers, if you know, there will be middlewares, but they will need to bring a lot of value to artists, not take huge commissions, bring demand, help them sell, the things that galleries always did, but with far smaller economics.
How does a construction company build their brand? Oh my gosh, have you not seen the way people follow homes online? I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the same way that you got food porn.
But I think to Trevor's point, you know, I agree with you, Michelle, but I think a lot of that is the consumer. And for Trevor, he's looking right for the B2B behavior. You're in the right platform right this minute, Trevor. I think you need to bring value to decision makers, right? The developers. You know, can you make content that is things like six things developers need to worry about in 2022? Right. How do you bring high value information to the person that makes the decision on which construction company do they use? Those people mainly live on LinkedIn. A LinkedIn content and media strategy is what you need.
Yeah. And then at the end of the day, I mean, a construction company can exist on very few customers. And so that referral network, having every single one of those projects create three more for you, is actually probably the most powerful way to build both your company and your brand.
I like that.
What kind of NFT product, art, or otherwise that is not on the market would you like to see the most?
I mean, all of it, Matthew. You know, like, we're in the beginning stages. That's like asking what websites would you like to see in 1995? All of them, right? I mean, I think the reality is in the art is unlimited. So I want to see all 7.7 billion people's opinion on what art is to them. And then what we talked about earlier, the utility functions have not even begun to start. And there's so many ways to do it. And I think people need to spend real time thinking about that. You know, what does the smart contract hold? People are gonna buy homes in NFT form. People are gonna make business transactions. People are gonna give up pieces of equity if you buy the NFT, royalties, there's so much. So that's how I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, just getting started. Okay, last one. What are some of the things one should focus on when creating content on LinkedIn at the start of their entrepreneurial journey?
Talking about what they actually know, not faking it till you make it, like actually talking about stuff you know. Why would anybody that sees this in this stream watch this? the world is filled with selfish content creators. We need more selfless.
Yeah. And I'd say the other thing is, like, at the end of the day, one of the biggest storylines in the world is how you build a company. It is filled with drama and downside and tears. And I mean, I've been doing this my whole life, and it's like, you know, my life is a TV show. and did get to become a little bit of that. And so sharing some of those really vulnerable, authentic moments, I think, is so critical. I mean, that's what people want. They want to understand at the end of the day that we are not alone. And so, you know, we build content that is exactly what Gary said, that looks selfish and looks promotional, and looks like I'm doing so well. I actually think you stand out when you say, like, I fuck things up, and like, this is, I made this mistake, so you don't have to. And when it's genuine and it doesn't feel overproduced, I actually think that's, you know, early stage companies have some of the craziest stories of all time. And so you have incredible content to start out with.
I agree. All right. This was a lot of fun. Episode one in the books of Fuck Yeah Fridays.
Episode one in the books. Thank you guys all joining us for Fuck Yeah Fridays. Because of travel schedules, we are going to be doing this on Thursday next week, which is the 30th at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So we'll get, you know, a little bit of that.
Can we call it Fuck Yeah Thursday?
Yeah, we can call it Fuck Yeah Thursday. We can do whatever. And so if you want to apply for the show, go to clear.co/FYF. To be selected at next week's. Gary, I had so much fun doing this with you.
Me too. I know a lot of you who are watching in my community desperately trying to get time together. It's impossible for me, so take advantage of it. clear.co/FYF. Put in your applications. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for watching. As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness, I'm gonna have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing 5-star review reads, besides hearing your podcast every day, which is the best, I just want to say, ever since I read your book, Crushing It, I started making comedy videos again since I stopped doing it during the Vine days. Ever since then, I'm making a lot of people laugh, and I also started collecting NFT collectibles and started making moves financially. But most importantly, I've never been so happy. I love you, bro. Thank you so much for that kind review. And to anybody else listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.